Dr. William Luther Pierce on The End of the Millennium, 1996.
Hello. As we move into the last presidential administration of this millennium, of this 1,000 years, it may be useful for us to survey our recent past and think about how we can do better in the future. If we are to survive the next millennium, we really must avoid some of the mistakes we made in this one, especially in this last century of the millennium. The 20th century has not been a good one for us. In the 19th century, we were doing pretty well. Our people ruled the planet, and no other race posed a threat to us, either demographically or militarily. The 19th century was a wonderfully creative century for music, for painting, for poetry, for literature, for philosophy, for fundamental science. It was a wonderful century for our race and for our civilization generally. And in the 19th century, we had more freedom than we had experienced in a long time, and a lot more freedom than we have left at the end of the 20th century. Of course, you won't agree with that if you think of freedom as something which the government gives you, a handout or special protection or a law requiring other people to give you something you couldn't get on your own. In the 19th century, our people were much more free than they are now to do what they wanted without government interference. They had more elbow room and fewer taxes, fewer laws, fewer meddling bureaucrats. Ideas flowed more freely. No one had invented political correctness. The 19th century was the white man's century. Of course, the 18th century and the 17th century and all the centuries before that had been white men's centuries too. It had always been a white world until the latter half of this century. In the 19th century, however, we made some big mistakes which paved the way for the disasters of the 20th century. In the United States, we freed all of our slaves and then failed to get rid of them by sending them back where they had come from. We just turn them loose to fend for themselves among us and to multiply. In Europe, we opened the ghettos and permitted Jews to begin participating in our cultural, political, and economic life. A really big mistake, but one whose consequences didn't hit us until the present century. In the 20th century, we have let ourselves be maneuvered into two disastrous world wars in which we destroyed much of our best racial stock. We permitted Jewish Bolshevism to rise up and consume half of Europe. In this century, we saw the rise of the mass media under Jewish influence. We saw the breakdown of most of our traditions, our morals, our manners, and the rise of a lunatic egalitarianism, which has made a shambles of our civilization. We saw the corruption of our culture by a wave of lunatic modernism in music, in the graphic and plastic arts, and in literature. We saw the rise of diversity and multiculturalism and miscegenation and the destruction of our cities. We saw the rise of feminism and homosexuality and every other sort of perversion and filth. We saw this filth declared not normal, even admirable by the media and sanctioned by legislation. We saw our political system become an obscenely corrupt circus, culminating in 8 years of Bill Clinton. The disaster of the 20th century has been concealed from us to a certain extent because the scientific advances we made in the 19th century led to enormously powerful technological developments in this century. The flowering of our technology and the overwhelming effect technology has had on our economy and our lifestyles has fooled many of us into believing that our civilization is still making progress. The intellectual developments leading to the automobile, the airplane, radio and television, and even the computer, all had been made in the 19th century. But only in this century were these advances transformed into large-scale applications affecting the lives of everyone. We have many more shiny toys and appliances and tools today than ever before. But we have practically destroyed the civilization out of which these things grew. And we are well on the way to destroying the race which created that civilization. The greatest physical threat our people are facing today is that of what our enemies worship as diversity. It is the threat of becoming overwhelmed everywhere by hordes of non-whites. It is the threat of being outnumbered even on our own turf. It is the threat of losing our breeding area and becoming submerged in the rising tide of non-whites everywhere. It is an urgent, immediate threat. If we do not eliminate it in the next few years, then in the coming century, it will destroy us completely. That is the great physical threat to our existence, which we must fight. But before we can hope to eliminate that threat, we must eliminate the moral threat to our existence, which has caused the physical threat. We must deal with the moral breakdown, which has led so many of our own people to look forward eagerly to the physical annihilation of our race. We have an utterly sick moral atmosphere nearly everywhere, which makes many of our people feel that it is wicked to be concerned about the survival of our race. It is a moral sickness which makes so-called racism the greatest of sins and equates any concern of feeling for our own race with that sin. It is perfectly all right, of course, to be concerned about the survival of blacks or Indians or Jews, but not whites. White children are being taught by television and by their churches and by their schools that white people are responsible for everything that is bad in the world, and that the world will be a better and happier place when there are no more white people in it, and that to try to protect or preserve the white race is to commit the unforgivable sin of racism. Of course, much of that teaching is still tacit, still implicit, but it is becoming more and more explicit every day. The government is involved in it, the churches are involved in it, but the driving force behind that teaching is in the mass media, especially the entertainment media. Nearly every film, nearly every new television show pushes the same ideas over and over. Racial mixing is good. Miscegenation is good. More non-white immigration is good. More diversity is good. More multiculturalism is good. More affirmative action is good. And any opposition to these things is bad, bad, bad. Perhaps you think I exaggerate this situation, but I do not. As I said, much of this poison which is being pumped into the souls of the American people is disguised and indirect and implicit. But believe me, it is there, and it is deliberate. It is calculated by the people who control the mass media. I'll give you an example of my own experience in this regard. The organization which I head, the National Alliance, distributes a 3-inch by 5-inch sticker with a simple message intended to be as inoffensive as possible. The message is, quote, "Earth's most endangered species, the white race, help preserve it," close quote. That's all, plus our mailing address, so people can write for more information. We've distributed literally millions of these little stickers during the past 10 years, and we've made contacts with a lot of good people through these stickers. But we've also been surprised to find that a great many white people are embarrassed, angered, and offended by the simple message on our stickers. We receive letters from people who've seen one of our stickers, and they'll say, "Stop putting up your racist stickers in my neighborhood. We don't want any more of your hate. I intend to notify the FBI if I see another of your stickers." Occasionally, I've had a chance to talk to one of these people directly, and I'll ask, "What do you find hateful or racist about our stickers?" A typical response will be, well, what about black people? Don't they deserve to survive too?" And I'll say, "This sticker doesn't say anything about black people one way or another. The survival of black people is another subject. I'm white, and I'm concerned about the survival of my people. That's what this sticker is about." And this will result in another hostile outburst. See, that's the trouble. You don't care about black people or Jewish people or anybody but whites. You're a racist. You're a hater. Now, everyone listening today understands that if our stickers asked people to be concerned about the survival of black people, say, just black people, or just Jews, or just Indians, these politically correct types who are horrified by our stickers now would find nothing objectionable about them at all. They wouldn't have the confused notion that it's somehow illegal to be concerned about the survival of Indians and that they ought to go running to the FBI. They wouldn't see anything hateful in a sticker suggesting that blacks should be concerned about the future of their people. They are brainwashed. They are conditioned by the controlled media. They are reacting in an irrational way. But there are tens of millions of these authoritarian-type people out there who absorb every bit of poison from the mass media and take it to heart. There are enough of them to swing elections and determine public policy. And the poison continues to flow, more and more of it in every new batch of television programs and Hollywood films. And as I said, it is calculated poison. It is poison designed by the controllers of the media to have exactly the effect it does. Of all the evils which have befallen our people in this century, the rise of the mass media in Jewish hands has been the worst. What I am trying to do with these radio broadcasts is counteract this evil, this moral sickness, this moral paralysis being promoted by the controlled media, which keeps our people from taking action against the physical threat of racial annihilation facing us. It is an enormous task because the resources of the television networks and of Hollywood and Madison Avenue and the government are so much greater than ours. But it is by no means a hopeless task. We reach new people every day and help them to see the truth and to understand what is happening. And we motivate many of them to join us in fighting the evil which threatens our race. But it is reality itself. It is the growing nastiness of life in multicultural America which is making people face the facts more than we can hope to with our present resources. Most ordinary Americans have been trying to ignore what is being done to our country. They want to be nice to everybody if they can. They don't want to offend anyone. They don't want the busybodies in the Clinton government to put their names on a blacklist of politically incorrect citizens. They just want to be left alone to live their lives and take care of their families and raise their children in peace. But it's becoming harder and harder to do that. Reality keeps getting in the way. No matter how hard they try to avoid the nastiness, it keeps finding them. Now, more and more of them finally are deciding they can't keep ignoring the assault on our people. If nothing else, the increasingly blatant and obvious and vicious anti-white propaganda on television has forced them to the realization that there will be no future for their children if things keep going along the same course. They're finally beginning to realize that they must do something, that the nightmare won't go away if they just ignore it. And so my voice and other American dissident voices are doing more than just competing against the Jewish media for the attention of the people. We are more like a catalyst now. Conditions themselves are making the people pay attention and are turning them against the poison of the controlled media. My voice and a few others just need to give a hint, make a suggestion, point the direction, help people get started on the way back to freedom and health. Even though the controlled media can speak much more loudly than we can now, we still are being heard by more and more people. And let me tell you, the people who are destroying America, the people who want to destroy our race, the people who are cooking the television poison don't like that a bit. They understand what they are doing. They know that as their destructive efforts become more evident, there will be a growing backlash against them. They are afraid of that backlash. They are desperate to silence every voice in opposition to theirs. They believe that if no one is allowed to contradict them, then our people won't know whom to blame for the destruction and that they'll be able to continue leading us into the slaughterhouse. That is why they have been pushing so hard in recent years to abolish the First and Second Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. That is why they have been trying to convince us that dissident voices just cause trouble and that the public would be better off if no one were permitted to criticize their policies or alert the people to what they're doing. The second Clinton administration will be their big chance to silence their opponents, to make dissent illegal, and to keep anyone from exposing what they're doing. The next 4 years. That is their opportunity. There's no telling what will happen after the year 2000. They've been able to control the electoral process so far through their control of the media. But the natives are becoming restless. It's not likely, but it is possible that someone with some principles, someone with some patriotic feeling, might win an election after Clinton is out. So now, while they have a totally unprincipled president who is completely under their control and will do absolutely anything they tell him, now is the time for them to push through new laws making it illegal to say or write anything which is politically incorrect. If they can count on the FBI and the other secret police agencies to lock up anybody who says anything against them, it will be a lot easier for them to keep a lid on unrest and dissent after the end of the millennium. And now, with the economy still relatively strong, all of the authoritarian types, the ones who want to call the FBI when they see one of our stickers, will go along with the abolition of free speech rights. If they wait until the economy collapses and a lot of people are angry and frightened, they will have a much harder time taking away what's left of our rights and keeping us quiet. So here's another prediction. You remember, last week I predicted that Clinton's new all-Jewish national security team would attempt to lead us into a major war during the next 4 years. My new prediction is that the Clinton government, with the collaboration of the Republican Congress, will respond to media demands and move to restrict our First Amendment rights. I predict that we'll see a major push during the next 4 years to criminalize political dissent. Of course, they won't call it that, just like they won't tell us that they're leading us into a war because a war serves their needs. Instead, the media and the government will tell us, oh, we've been attacked by Saddam or whomever. Now we must respond to protect our national security. And they won't say, we're taking away your freedom of speech because we're afraid of what you may say. Instead, they'll say, we're all in favor of political debate, between Republicans and Democrats, of course. We believe in free speech for nearly everyone. It's just those extremists, those haters who must be silenced. We have to lock them up, because otherwise they'll say things which will get people upset. And the first thing you know, we'll have another Oklahoma City bombing or another race riot. So that's what we're facing as this century and this millennium roll to an end. If our enemies have their way, it'll be the last millennium on Earth for our race, forever. We haven't got much time. Let's see what we can do to upset their apple cart before this millennium is over. Let's do whatever we have to do to get ourselves back on track and make sure that the next millennium belongs to us too. Thanks for being with me today.